the show.
Hey everyone, and welcome to this week's Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, here in the studio with Mott, Steve, and Ashley. Hi everyone.
Hi Lisa.
Hey, yo, what's up?
Not much.
What?
Steve, you're just so urban. You're awesome. I love it. So anyway,
you know, you can take the boy out of the city, but no.
Yeah. We're not sure about which city, but that's okay. Well, welcome everyone to this week's roundtable and to this week's show. Later on in the show, I'm going to be talking with Mott, helping out a guy who's trying to figure out whether to ask this girl out in his singles group. But he doesn't know because he doesn't want to disrupt dynamics, and we'll tell you whether or not he should disrupt them. So, and then culture today, Kevin DeYoung, back for his third book in like 3 weeks. I don't know, whatever. He just writes one a week. talking about his newest book, Why We Love the Church. So make sure you stay tuned for that because that's a good discussion we have with him. But first up, we're going to talk a little bit about movies. We've all come through the summer and the summer blockbusters, none of which I think I saw. But just talking about throwing out the question of, have you ever seen a movie, especially if you've made it through the entire movie and didn't walk out? Maybe you should have walked out, but you didn't. And maybe you wish you would have benefited from some front end information about that movie. So who has had that experience?
You know, I did going way back. I don't know how many of our listeners for me with Joe Versus the Volcano, but it was a Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan movie. And I take a date to see it. And it should have been a sign when we walked in and realized we were the only people at the theater. Mm. And we thought it'd be fun, since we're the only people there, to sit in the aisle instead of sitting in our seats. So that was kind of fun and romantic for a few minutes. And then...
for a few minutes. Or weird.
The movie just got so tedious. It was so depressing. Oh. And we decided... We're not gonna force ourselves to endure the whole movie, and got up and walked out. I think it's the only movie I've walked out of. Huh. But I definitely would have loved a heads up of what I was getting into, just not what I expected. Just from other Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan movies, you kind of have certain expectations.
Yeah, I had one I walked out on too. And this was interesting because it was mine and Beth's first date. And I took her to see Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery. And I took her to see it because there were men in our church. And yes, I'm talking about Capitol Hill Baptist, who were talking up the movie and talking about how funny it was. So that's all I knew about the movie. So I take Beth, and I knew it was a mistake, you know, about 5-10 minutes into it. But it just shows you how juvenile I am. I'm laughing throughout the first 5 or 10 minutes. And so finally I feel so uncomfortable, and I see Beth shifting in her seat, and I said, let's leave. And so we left, but not, you know, without me laughing, literally walking out the movie theater.
Wow. Well, do you think that would have been your last date if you hadn't walked out?
Yeah, probably. Yes.
And we've now lost Scott Croft and Michael Lawrence as contributors to Boundless because Mott just called them out on the podcast.
It wasn't awesome. Them, though. It was some other
Not rogues. To mention, Steve, why are you just sitting in an aisle with a girl? Boundary issues, and now you've just lost your credibility, whatever.
There was no balance on my radar screen then.
This was before BB, before Boundless. Okay.
Well, and probably my worst experience in a movie was my father-in-law suggesting we go see Thomas Crown Affair. And I had no idea. I mean, it had Rene Russo in it, who was claiming to be a Christian at the time and talking about her faith. And next thing you know, she's sharing everything with everybody. And I'm right there with my father-in-law, totally embarrassed and trying to hide under my seat. And sure would have been nice to have a little bit of heads up what I was getting into with that movie.
Mm-hmm. I went as a chaperone on a date once with one of my friends and her boyfriends. I think, my goodness, we weren't even able to drive. We must have been in ninth grade or something. And we went and saw 9mm. I don't know if anyone's familiar with that, but it's a film that has Nicolas Cage in it, and it's about a genre of pornography. It's about the porn industry, about films where they actually kill people in the making.
Like snuff films.
Yes, snuff films.
Oh, my goodness.
And my goodness, like I said, I guess I was in ninth grade sitting here watching this. I didn't really understand what pornography was. I was really just naive, and it was scary. I think I covered my eyes for the whole movie, but I sat there behind my friends watching them not watch the movie.
I think it's called 8mm.
Oh.
Nine.
Yeah, I think it is.
Nine millimeter is about guns.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, gun. Nine millimeter.
Well, maybe that's the connection. It's like 8mm meets 9mm.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, so that, something like that. I wish that I had known about plugged in when I was in ninth grade. Was plugged in around when I was in ninth grade?
I think so.
Probably, since it was like 2 years ago, right? Okay. I mean, whatever. Hey, now. They've been around for a while. Okay. Anywho.
That was at least 5 years ago.
So I'm not entirely sure. I've had a few of these instances, but okay, first of all, I would maybe like to be a little self-righteous here in that I was telling Ashley this earlier this morning. I just have a blanket like policy that I won't see anything rated R unless it is specifically recommended to me for some specific reason. So Slumdog would be a good example where they said, you know, go see that movie. And usually it's rated R because of some kind of like, you know, real life, gritty violence or something like that. And obviously you're looking at the streets of India and stuff like that. So there you have it. But believe it or not, I've also had to, you know, walk out of movies or had disappointing experiences with movies that passed that test even. One being Dodgeball. And I think I've mentioned that this show before. And I basically, after that film and then Starsky and Hutch, had to just put a moratorium on all Frat Pack movies. So the Ben Stiller, Vince Vaughn, that triumvirate or whoever those guys
are. Will
Ferrell. Yeah. Well, I kind of like Will Ferrell. I mean, like Elf, you know, he's done some redeeming things, but all those other ones, it's just like, they're just totally nasty and vulgar and stuff. So that's a mess. But probably the kingpin for me was a movie called Fat Girls, which and when I say
wasn't
fat,
that a P-H-A-T? Oscar nominee?
It was pretty much, yeah, starring Monique. And it's P-H-A-T, yeah, Fat Girls. So a bunch of us girls went for a girl's birthday, one of our friends, and we just thought it would be really funny. And of course, I'm a big fan of African-American humor. I love the Madea franchise and all that. So I just was like, oh, this is going to be hilarious. It was crude and disgusting and stupid, first of all. And there was one scene where I think she was trying to detox from food. I'm not exactly sure, but it was basically like reminiscent of someone coming off of like heroin or something. And it was so creepy and bizarre. And none of us, we still talk about it to this day, about the fact that we did not walk out of this film, despite being so uncomfortable and so creeped out by it. And it was painful. So
yeah, you're sitting there thinking, I just paid $35 for this movie or whatever you pay at some theater.
Yeah. Lisa, you reminded me that we walked out of, Beth and I, we walked out of Starsky and Hutch too. And we asked permission to go to another movie. And I think what we ended up seeing was 50 First Dates, which was cute.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think the biggest disappointment is that you have the expectation of, all right, we're going to go out with friends or we're going to have a date night tonight and you're going to spend some money. You're going to take away time that you could be doing something else. That you do have kind of a romantic expectation. It's going to be the big screen. It's going to be lights and sound and great action and great story. It's going to be dramatically moving. That you really feel kind of cheated if you walk out and then you were let down. So that's why I think there is something to getting a little sense of what you're getting into. I mean, we don't buy cars without test driving. We don't do a lot of things without getting some kind of heads up. It's amazing how often we walk into a movie just based on a quick trailer we saw or a friend who said, oh, it's great, I loved it. And so that's why we've been kicking around as a team saying, you know, how could we offer more for young adults, whether it's a young single or a young couple who's trying to make that call. And so that's why we've been talking with the team here at Plugged In, who does the movies. And we said, let's do kind of a Plugged In for big people. Plugged In's meant for parents to make good calls for their kids, for their teenagers. And so we said, hey, what if we did something like that to help a young adult or a young couple make a call for a date night, for a guy's night, a girl's night? And we're excited. We think we've got a neat product that gives that heads up that we've been looking for.
Yeah, it's going to be a weekly feature, and we're going to discuss 3 to 5 movies, one of which may be a video, because we want to give the viewer something to see, and it's called Real Discernment with Plugged In's Bob Walaszewski and Cheryl Wilhelmy. And it's them just giving a quick heads up, really, on the top 3 to 5 movies, and it's going to be about 5 minutes long, so it's going to be quick, but I think it's going to be very, really helpful.
So it sounds like basically the distinctive to what people already know from going to Plugged In Online is that they'll actually give some rather than just, you know, counting F-bombs and stuff like that, they're actually going to give some subjective comments as well about what they feel.
They'll still count the F-bombs.
Yeah.
But I think by watching this video, you're going to be able to tell whether or not this movie's lame, you know, even aside from the content.
I think the best value in it is that you get that insight as a Christian that, regardless of what the trailer implied, here's what it actually delivered on, and sometimes you're going to be pleasantly surprised at how good it was, how redemptive it came across, and sometimes you're going to realize you got a bait and switch with the trailer, that the trailer sold something that it didn't deliver on, and especially as a believer who's trying to be careful about what you ingest, to know just how much mud are you going to have to drag through to get to the redemptive elements of this movie. Is it worth it at all? Is there anything redemptive about it? And I think that is going to help a lot of people end up having much better date nights, girls nights, guys nights, if they have that heads up to know when it's worth getting through a couple of tough spots to get the redemptive message, or if it even shows up.
Yeah, I think people should go to Boundless. It's up now. The feature's there. It's a video short. You can see the feature there. Just click on it and then let us know what you think. I think this will be helpful because I mentioned the Tyler Perry and the Madea franchise there. His new film, I Can Do Bad All By Myself, is coming out, and I saw the trailer for it, and whatever character Mary J. Blige plays is like busting out of her top. So I'm going to have to look and see what that's all about because she's a nightclub singer or something like that. So that will possibly be helpful for me for the many dates that I'm going on and bringing guys to see these films. So, okay, well, we'll check it out. Go to boundless.org, look at the feature, Reel, that's R-E-E-L, discernment, catchy, and let us know what you think. Write to us, editor@boundless.org. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Lisa.
A child like love I had when we first began. We ran and I fell. I've been stuck here all this time. You waited like a lover who couldn't let go of his bride. I turned my back away from you, didn't shed a tear or cry. But I'm falling for you now. I'm coming back to the place where we part. It's for you this time. So I'll be here waiting where we started. My feet were searching for the shot, I found the place where I met you.
Culture segment. I am joined by Kevin DeYoung. Kevin, welcome to the Boundless Show.
Good to be here.
Hey, good to hear from you again. For those of you out there, you know that we've already spoken with Kevin. You're just like a book writing machine. What in the world? It's like every time you have a book, we want to talk about it. But it's just what is this? Like in the last 3 months, you've just written all three of these, or?
Well, not quite. Let's see. I had the Emergent book come out last year, and then first part of this year, I've had a couple of books come out, Just Do Something, which was reworked from some sermons that I had given. So that was sort of cheating, you know, not a red book. Uh-huh. And then Why We Love the Church, of course, I wrote that with Ted again. So I just, you know, either write small books or I find other people to write half of the book with me. So it makes me look more impressive than I am.
That's the way to do it. I think I have yet to write a book, but I figured that with all the blathering I've done on blog posts, I could probably just compile a bunch of them and publish something.
Oh, yeah, that'll be the next Harry Potter, I would think.
I think so. Well, I'm, as I already said, talking with Kevin DeYoung. He is the author of Why We're Not Emergent, by Two Guys Who Should Be, as well as Just Do Something. We've talked about both of those books here on the podcast. And he's back with me today to talk about Why We Love the Church, In Praise of Institutions and Organized Religion, which you co-authored, as you just alluded to, with Ted Kluck, right?
Yep.
Okay, that subtitle, In Praise of Institutions and Organized Religion, is probably, just reading that to most young adults would just be anathema even hearing that. So that was pretty bold of you to make that as a subtitle.
Yeah, we kind of fought tooth and nail with Moody, who's great to work with, but to keep that subtitle, I think they were thinking the same thing. This is not going to appeal to our target audience. And we had the word hierarchy in there at one point, and we did cave in and said, okay, we'll get rid of hierarchy. But we really wanted to make clear that we were trying to say something that is sort of countercultural, especially among young people. But I think it's really biblical that institutions and organized religion, although they get a bad rap, it's easy to pick on nameless, faceless institutions, yet they seem pretty essential to Christ's plan for the world and the way in which his gospel goes forward.
Yeah. Okay, we know from past interviews that you pastor a church there, up in Michigan, right near Michigan State, and have a large group of young adults in your congregation, college-age students. What did you have them in mind when you wrote this book?
Yeah, although, you know, of course, if they're at our church, they're probably okay with institutions in organized religion. But yet, it is certainly popular among many students, and I think even more than students, just 20-somethings, 30-somethings, this idea that I could really find God if I left the church. In fact, the church is really getting in my way of having an authentic relationship with Jesus. And I mean, to be honest, we do run into some of that with some of the young people here, just the very thing you alluded to, folks who for one reason or another don't like the idea of church membership. Again, some people may be members and everything, but the word, and still be very involved and committed to the church and have, you know, I know different denominations don't believe in membership, so I'm not talking about that so much as just those who feel like, hey, I don't really need to be committed. I'm part of the universal church. I don't really need to set up shop here at this local church or put my name on the rolls anywhere. And, you know, one of the things we try to hammer home for folks is, it's not only for our benefit that people would join a church. That's part of it, because if we're to be shepherds of the flock, we need to know who are the sheep that are here. Yeah, but it's also for the benefit of the people in the church, the accountability, the submission to proper, loving authority, just the discipline of being in the same church family week in and week out. God intends all those things to be used for our sanctification. So we're trying to put in a good word for institutions and organized religion among the young people here. And for the most part, I think people are pretty receptive to that message.
Yeah. I know when I joined my church, I was pretty surprised. And having grown up in the church and never had a problem with church involvement, I mean, my dad was a pastor, so it was kind of like, you know, you just do it. But I never had a problem with that. But I know that when I joined my current church, I remember they gave me kind of a little spiel about putting myself under the authority of the elders. And I was like, whoa, you know, that was kind of more hardcore than I'd expected. And I think my church really does live that out pretty well and expects that of its members. And, you know, obviously in the cases of church discipline or were something to come about and or if there's conflict within the church with you and another member, they will step in. And I, you know, I have appreciated that. But as you said, you know, there are many denominations that don't expect that of their members. And there are many believers who as you said, you know, said, well, you know, I have my little small group, or I read so-and-so's books and they kind of keep me on track. And that does not necessarily suffice.
Yeah. In Hebrews 13:17, I'm cheating here because I just opened my Bible, so don't think I have it all memorized.
That's okay. We support open Bibles on the Boundless Show.
Oh, that's good.
You're good.
Yep. Obey your leaders and submit to them, for they are keeping watch over your souls as those who will have to give an account. Let them do this with joy and not with groaning, for that would be of no advantage to you. And I just think that verse says a lot to church leadership and also those sitting under church leadership. It says to pastors and elders that they need to do this work with joy. First Peter says that we're not to lord it over them. Of course, Jesus says similar words, not lording over our authority like the Gentiles do. So it's a servant leadership, to use that kind of cliche. But this also speaks to those who are in the pews or in the yellow plastic chairs, as the case is at our church, that you do need to submit yourself to this authority because, you know, in a good church, the elders are there to keep watch over your souls. It's like the watchmen on the walls or the shepherds in Ezekiel 33 and 34 that, I mean, the Lord speaks very harshly to these leaders, that they will have blood on their hands if they see the people erring. They see danger coming and they don't warn them. So, I mean, of course, this doesn't mean that, you know, every elder has to know all of your deepest, darkest secrets. But, you know, at least in our church, we take really seriously. We go through and pray for our members by name, and we have our elders report on the people in their district. And if they see, hey, you know, we haven't seen so-and-so for 4 months, what's going on, or 2 months, we'll make a phone call. And it's not to try to be nosy, but to really take seriously, this is the flock that the Lord has entrusted to our care, and we need to do a good job taking care of it. I mean, this verse is sobering. We will have to give an account for it. And I just think without membership, without organized religion, it's hard to do any of that very well.
Right. Well, and I think it's important to note that this isn't all about smackdowns either. I mean, I know as a single woman in my church, I have benefited from the involvement of the elders in my life as advocates for me, as, you know, they've stepped in several times in roles, whether in relationships or other things that I've had going on. My father is no longer around. He died of cancer. And so I have seen the benefit of the church in a family sense in coming around me to support me in a way that my family would. In the past.
Yeah, and certainly we don't always get it right. I mean, the elders are humans too, and we botch things or miss opportunities, but I think that's a great example, and hopefully we try to do the same thing here. It's not just getting up in people's grills so we can rebuke them, but saying, what's going on in your life? How can we pray for you? And oh, you have this issue going on. We'd love to have a couple elders come over and pray for you. Even, you know, We take James 5 seriously, and we'll lay hands on someone and anoint them with oil and healing for the sick. And I'm not even charismatic, and we still do that. So we really try to do as best we can this kind of New Testament shepherding ministry.
Sure. Okay, so we've talked to this a little bit, but I just want to have you spell it out a little bit more clearly. What does the church provide for the believer that they are not going to get in a small group, by reading Christian literature, by working for a Christian ministry? Because, you know, that's the trap out here in Colorado Springs, is I work for a Christian ministry and I go to devotions every day with my people. And that, you know, that's my church. Well, yeah, whatever. So tell us what's your biggest, if you had to sit down in front of someone who was, you know, 28 years old and said, you know, I just want to hike on the weekends, and I'm reading my online devotional, so what else do I need? What would you tell them?
Right. There's a number of different ways to approach that. I mean, first of all, I would talk about the things the New Testament says about the church. Jesus founded the church. There's a lot of different images that the church is the building and Christ is the foundation, that the church is the body, Christ is the head. The church is the bride, Christ is the groom. So if we're dissing church, we're dissing on Jesus' girlfriend, which isn't a cool thing to do. So So I would try to establish, first of all, the priority of the church in the New Testament. And most people probably say, okay, well, yeah, I get that. The church, capital C, right? But, you know, church is just God's people. And so if I can be with God's people over the internet or at Starbucks, then why do I need church as we know it? So then I would try to talk about what we see in the New Testament is that church, big C, always expresses itself in local manifestations of that church. John Stott remarks that, you know, looking through the book of Acts, that all those who were saved were added, and all those who were added were saved. You don't see people just becoming Christians and doing their own thing. They're added to this, to some body. They're added to the church. And you see that assumption all throughout the New Testament when Paul is writing most of his letters to churches. You know, you can assume that the churches in Corinth are going to get this word because they're gathered in one or more assemblies, local churches, bodies, that they're not just all doing their own thing. And I think, you know, we talked about the need to for accountability and for discipline. It's also true, like any family, that the church is there for our sanctification. And part of the sanctification is it is going to be hard sometimes. And I think we rob ourselves of a lot of what God wants to do in our lives when we just, okay, something's boring, something's hard, I don't really like the way this music goes, or they don't really have anything for people of my age group, I'm out of here, and I'll just go to Garden of the Gods on the weekend. You know, I think we really miss out that God wants to do a work through the hard things, and we're so apt to just run away when we don't like something or it becomes difficult. And, you know, I want to say to some of these folks as kindly as I can, I mean, read Philippians 2. If Jesus left the splendor of heaven to become a man and live among us as evidence of his humility, surely it's not asking too much for Christians out there to actually be a part of a local church. Surely that's not so far beneath them, or it's not so riddled with imperfection that they couldn't possibly be a part of it. If Christ could live among us, surely the Christians out there who want to go hiking on the weekends could humble themselves to be a part of some local body.
Yeah. You know, and it is so true. I mean, I can't even tell you how many people I know who, even in my current church, who have come and attended and even invested, gotten involved, you know, been in leadership or whatever. And then the minute, you know, they disagree with something, or the minute they have a conflict with someone or something happens, you know, they're just out of there. And it's like that, you know, they're missing out on a huge element, not only of sanctification, obviously, but of community, and the sense that, you know, were they in a family, you don't just leave your family. You find a way to, you know, work through conflict and serve alongside one another. And it is, you know, and we've talked about, you know, being consumers of church many times here on the show and the problems with that. But I think there's something to be said for saying, wow, you know, there are all kinds of areas, you know, whether people in the church or, you know, systems or programs in our church or whatever that I'm not on board with. But, you know, that doesn't mean, you know, you're going to just bust out of there. I don't know. I'm just
yeah,
so over
I mean,
that.
It is one of the ironies of our day that so many young people are just screaming about community, but people want to talk about community. They don't want to actually live in community.
Mm-hmm.
Or they want to talk about diversity, and then they want to go meet with three other friends who are just like them and look like them and like the same films and vote the same way, and that will be their community. When it's hard, I mean, real community is difficult because you have old people, young people, and different sort of folks and different kinds of ideas. And it reflects the nature of God, that He dwells, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, in eternal community with Himself. And so in order to reflect that, we too have to be in, as Bonhoeffer says, an articulated organism. And I think that's also what we see in the New Testament, that church is not just plural for Christians. I mean, where two or three are gathered, I mean, read that verse. It actually has to do with the church discipline.
Hmm.
When two or three are gathered is not just, well, hey, there's two of us, we have a church. No, a church has certain officers, certain structures. There's preaching, there's sacraments, There's certain boundaries to it, which is why I think a lot of times people say, well, I'm into Jesus, but not the church, because Jesus can be just about whatever you want. Jesus is Bono in a bathrobe. He's just, you know, he does good things. But the church gives some structure and some form and some doctrine, and that's often what people find distasteful and why they sometimes want to just go off and do their own thing.
Yeah. Okay, really quickly here before we go, now let's speak to the opposite side of that, because I see this problem as well. In fact, we just had our pastor at our church just address this on Sunday, and that is Christians who get involved in their local church, join the church, and then it's like you can't get them out the doors. I mean, it's like they go to church and they're in five Bible studies and they go to all these programs and they have all their friends and their little cliques within their church, and you know, they don't know their own neighbors and they're not out in their communities being salt and light and introducing others to the gospel. So how do you have a balance there?
Mm-hmm. We do need to, especially as pastors, we need to keep challenging our people. I was just talking this Sunday. We have all these students coming back and challenging people. Look, even if you have your friends and you're happy and you're content, don't be complacent, because there's a lot of new folks going to be coming through our doors, and they need somebody to say hi to them. They need somebody to talk to them. When I preached on hospitality before, I've told our congregation, look, you have my permission. In fact, I would rather you do one or two less things at the church if it means that once a month you can invite someone over to your house for dinner. So I think a lot of it does start with pastors not only challenging their congregation in that, but helping them to see that outside church ministry really counts as ministry, and not so loading people down with a small group and a Bible study and an accountability group and another Bible study and a Wednesday night program and a kids thing that they can't ever do anything. We need to simplify some of what we're doing at church so that people actually can get to know other people and join a community softball league or do whatever, so we don't fall into the trap of just me and my friends having a great time until Jesus comes back.
Mm-hmm. Hey, that's when they can get out up into the mountains or out to the lake or whatever, is when they get your non-Christian friends and go out there and go hiking and stuff like that.
Exactly.
So
yeah, don't just, well, that'll be my church on Sunday. Hey, if you like hiking or you like fishing, do it and invite some of your friends who don't know Jesus or some friends who just are lonely and need help, and that'd be a great way to minister.
All right. Well, the book is Why We Love the Church in Praise of Institutions and Organized Religion. It is by Kevin DeYoung. I'm speaking with Kevin right now, co-authored with his good buddy, Ted Kluck. Glad to see you guys writing together again there on that one.
It's fun to do it. He's a great writer and great friend.
That's fun. All right. I want you out there, you guys, to write to us, editor@boundless.org, and tell about your experience in your local church. I want to know who has joined their church. I want to know who has been in their church and has had someone, whether it's an elder or a pastor, a deacon, an older mentor, get up in your business and it has changed your life. We are serious about that here at The Boundless Show. You know that Mark Dever talks about it. Now Kevin and Ted are talking about it. We want to hear about it. We want to hear about young adults, singles who are involved in their local church, and it has made a difference, and how your perspective on the local church has changed as a result. You know, I'm not saying that Christian books aren't good and all this other stuff isn't good. They are. But as Kevin said, the local church serves a purpose and it's biblical, and we need to get with the program. So, Kevin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey. You always do a nice job. It's fun to be here and chat with you.
Well, it's great. So we're hoping to see you back in Colorado sometime. I mean, hello, you were here for a month and you didn't even visit us, but we're not going to be bitter because we know you have ministry to do. So,
well, it's like a fortress getting into the bowels of the Focus on the Family recording studios. So I couldn't get past the armed guards.
It is. It's a tricky business, but we're starting to let people sneak in occasionally. So you just give us a call next time and we'll be sure to let you in for real.
Okay, as long as I can go play at Wits End.
Exactly. So thanks so much, Kevin. You have a great day.
Thanks.
wondrous king, you are clothed in mystery. Your hands set people free, Father. All pain is over as your love draws us closer. Your grace goes on forever. So we sing, so we
We are opening up this week's inbox, and I'm in the studio with Mott. Hello, Mott.
Hi, Lisa.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Here to address a question from a listener who I believe is male, because he's interested in a female.
Yes, he is male.
Okay, that's good to know. So here we go. Let's find out what his issue is. He says, I'm in the young adults class at my church, and there is a woman in the class a couple years older than me in whom I have become interested. The problem I'm facing is the fear that things may become awkward in our Sunday school class if I reveal that I like her and would like to pursue a relationship. She is someone who I've learned is yearning for marriage and feels time isn't on her side. I don't want her to feel like I'd be pursuing her because it would be easy to get her to go out with me since she's looking for a relationship. Also, I'm worried that if we started dating, I would lose focus on the real reason I'm at church. I know from the advice on Boundless, the man should be bold and begin the pursuit. So should I man up and ask her outright or continue to build our friendship but not allow it to go into the emotionally connected stage before pursuing a relationship with her?
Well, there are a couple of things there. Let's address the concern he has about disrupting the singles community first. He should disrupt it. I mean, singles communities aren't Neverland. I mean, that's kind of crazy that he doesn't want to disrupt it. He can't. I mean, if he's interested in marriage, he can't just be too concerned about disrupting the dynamic of a singles group. And, you know, change is good. That should never really be a concern for single men and single women in a singles group at church, disrupting the singles group. I mean, you should look to disrupt it. You should look for a spouse there. And so it seems like that he's interested in this girl. So that, to me, is really a non-issue. Second thing he's asking, I think, is he's wanting to go from the stage of observing to actually asking her out. And I think it's a good question because I do think that there's a place for observing within the singles group and within group dates and the community itself. And I think that's very healthy. And so the short answer is yes, you know, man up, ask her out. It's time. But there are some questions I think he needs to ask himself. And seems like he's pretty convinced this might be a girl he wants to pursue. But, you know, is he ready to start dating? Is he growing in maturity? I mean, these are questions he could ask himself. I mean, if you look at some of the articles on Boundless and Scott Croft's article in particular, Are You Ready to Date? He asked things like, are you ready to be married in a year? This is a good question you need to ask yourself. I mean, do you have a job? You know, you can't be living in your parents' basement and think about pursuing a woman for marriage. So yes, I mean, I think he needs to do some self-examination. The other thing he could do, and I know he's been observing this girl, is to ask other people in the community or even people more mature who've observed them together or who know this girl, what their opinion is of her. And so just to get a little more confirmation from some people he respects.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I agree with that. I think that's good and think that he does need to, you know, make sure that he's serious. I think your comment about the singles group is right. You know, you're there to move beyond singleness if that's what you feel you're called to. So I think that's good. Though I think we do need to be realistic in saying that, yeah, sometimes it will disrupt it and things will become weird.
That's true.
But that's part of taking the risk. And, you know, I've found recently that, you know, I was a little bit naive in thinking that you can date people and then not date them and still, mm-hmm. you know, have a decent relationship. But no, inevitably someone's going to either going to leave the church or there's going to be some weirdness. But I think at times you can get beyond that and you just have to deal with it and realize there's a risk in that.
That's not inevitable, though.
Right.
I mean, I think that if it's done well and if it's done with emotions in check and certainly the physical in check, I think you can sit beside one another in the pew if it's done well and with accountability and with the help of the community. So there is no awkwardness. I mean, I guess there always could be a little awkwardness, but I've seen it. I've seen it happen mm-hmm. where a couple begin dating and they decide not to date anymore because they're not right for each other. And it's gone very well, and they're in the same community.
Yeah. I would counsel a little bit here. I mean, I saw a couple attitudes in this guy that maybe are concerning, but maybe it's just because he's throwing out stuff quickly on paper. But kind of the idea, I didn't feel a great, you know, it didn't seem like she was really being built up here and saying that it looks like she's just going to go out with him because she's so interested in being in a relationship. And, you know, one, I mean, do you think she's desperate? I don't know. I mean, do you think that she's just kind of an easy, you know, person to get to go out with you because of that? Just kind of didn't paint the best picture of her. And then the other thing that I was concerned about is you saying that you're worried that if we started dating, I would lose focus on the real reason I'm at church. And I think that's kind of a hard issue or a concern that maybe needs to be addressed apart from this relationship or not. I mean, make sure you are there for the right reasons and make sure that is happening, you know, regardless of whether or not you are or are not interested.
Yeah, those two pursuits aren't mutually exclusive.
Right.
I mean, you can pursue God and pursue marriage at the same time. And
right.
it's pretty natural, actually.
Yeah.
He sort of builds himself up a little bit. Yeah. All I need to do is ask her out and she's going to fall at my feet mm-hmm. and thank me. Look, it seems like she's been open with the fact that she wants to be married. I think that's a good thing. He should recognize that there's nothing wrong with that. And that doesn't mean she's going to, you know, follow head over heels immediately when he asks her out. Mm-hmm. He shouldn't think that. It's a good thing that she desires to be married. It's a good quality that she is vulnerable in that way, I think.
Yeah. So I guess we're saying, go ahead, ask her out.
Yes.
I mean, don't be shocked if she turns you down, but chances
are... Don't be shocked.
But she may say yes, which is great. And don't worry about the weirdness because you have to take a risk in this anyway. And don't worry about those other single people because they have different stories.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Mott.
Sure.
All right. That is it for this week's Inbox. As always, we want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org, and we'll be sure to get your question in the queue and find a way to answer it. If we don't know the answer, we will just go online and type questions into iVillage or something else where we can get worldly wisdom. No, I'm just teasing. We don't do that. So, but we will do our best to answer your questions. So please do write into us, and we hope to hear from you soon. Until next time, for The Boundless Show, I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, hoping you have a great week and that you'll be with us next week as well. Thanks. Bye-bye.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.